Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This Day in History class is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and welcome to This Day in History class, a show that flips through the pages of history to deliver old news in a new way. I'm Gabe Lousier, and today we're talking about the long, prestigious history of the Saturday Evening Post, an American literary institution that's still going strong after more than 200 years. The day was August 4th, 1821. The Saturday Evening Post published its inaugural issue. It was produced by Samuel Atkinson, the owner of a Philadelphia print shop, and by his partner, Charles Alexander, a local writer. Now considered America's oldest magazine, the Post began life as a weekly broadsheet newspaper. Organized into five densely packed columns spread across four oversized pages, the paper contained local and national news, as well as brief articles by the editor, and a selection of short stories and poems. Although it later became known for its evocative cover illustrations, particularly those by Norman Rockwell, the Saturday Evening Post originally lacked illustrations of any kind. Nonetheless, it provided a weekly dose of light reading for subscribers, keeping them informed and helping them unwind in the era before Sunday newspapers. In the summer of 1821, Samuel Atkinson became the sole proprietor of a print shop that had once belonged to Benjamin Franklin. His business partner, David Hall Jr., had just passed away, and Atkinson was unsure how to proceed without him. For the last 5 years, they had published a newspaper together called the Pennsylvania Gazette, the same one that Ben Franklin helped get off the ground a century earlier. But with his partner gone, Atkinson wondered if it might be better to close down the long-running Gazette and try something new. The push he needed came from a friend and collaborator named Charles Alexander. He approached Atkinson about publishing a popular poem about a blind woman in Philadelphia who set type by hand. Much to the printer's surprise, Alexander found 200 subscribers for that poem. That response convinced the men to join forces and start a new literary publication all their own. Subscribers would receive a new installment each Saturday, all for the low cost of $2 to $3 per year, depending on whether or not you paid in advance. Atkinson and Alexander chose to publish on Saturdays for two reasons. First, it would give them the whole week to prepare the next issue's content. And second, it would allow the paper to reach readers on the weekend, when they had the most free time. Back then, U.S. mail was delivered twice a day, once in the morning and again in the evening. The publishers planned to have each issue printed in time for the second mail delivery on Saturdays, and it's from that schedule that the magazine got its name, the Saturday Evening Post. Although it was an entirely new venture, the Post still owed a great deal to the past. Not only was the paper printed on Ben Franklin's original press, it was also written in his same matter-of-fact style, slightly skeptical and high-minded, but always with a dash of humor. They may have cribbed from the past when it came to tone, but the Post's young publishers were eager to make the paper appealing to readers from all walks of life, and from places outside of Philadelphia. To that end, they included stories on just about everything, from business and foreign affairs to fashion and etiquette. The poetry that helped launch the paper remained a fixture as well, with much of it contributed by readers who hoped to see their own names in print. The Post steered clear of political controversies to avoid ruffling feathers, but it did include more innocuous political content, such as letters exchanged between former presidents John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. With that variety of content, you might assume the Saturday Evening Post had a sizable staff, but that wasn't the case. Instead, the Post reprinted much of its content from other newspapers. That was a common practice at the time, and it still is today, with multiple publications running the same story in different regions and markets. The Post included new writing as well, some of which was no doubt reused by other papers. That free sharing of content sometimes gave bizarre local interest stories a much larger platform than they may have warranted. For instance, consider this not-so-newsworthy story that the Saturday Evening Post picked up from a Connecticut newspaper. It reads, quote, "There is now residing in Stafford a man by the name of Nolan, who is at present married to his 26th wife, and has, by the whole, 73 children. He is 105 years of age, and his present wife is now pregnant." That silly and somewhat disturbing story has been making the rounds in various sources since the 1820s, and I'm proud to carry on that tradition today. In all fairness, though, the content of the Post steadily improved as the paper grew. Before long, it featured plenty of high-quality writing, including the works of beloved American authors such as Edgar Allan Poe, Washington Irving, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and Mark Twain. Those new voices helped increase the magazine's circulation to about 90,000 readers in the 1850s and 60s. Unfortunately, the Saturday Evening Post lost its luster by the late 1800s, when it started to lean too heavily on trivia, fashion news, and reprinted articles. With no fresh, enticing content to keep subscribers invested, the Post's circulation dwindled to just over 2,000 readers by the late 1890s. Ownership of the paper had changed hands several times by then, and at the turn of the 20th century, it was Cyrus Curtis's turn at the helm. Curtis was the founder of Ladies' Home Journal, which was the first American magazine to reach a circulation of 1 million readers. He hoped to work that same magic on the Post by revamping both its content and its style. He started by doing away with a reliance on reprinted content and by commissioning full-color illustrations for every issue's cover. Within a year, that new direction had boosted the Saturday Evening Post to 250,000 subscribers. 8 years later, in 1908, Curtis reached his goal of 1 million readers, a well-earned payoff, considering the publisher had already invested more than $1.2 million in the Post. George Lorimer was another person key to the success of the magazine's relaunch. As editor, he strived to find the best writers of the day and made sure to pay them promptly as a way to foster loyalty. This approach attracted a whole new crop of talented authors, including Jack London, Joseph Conrad, and O. Henry. Lorimer was also responsible for selecting many of the Post's iconic covers. He featured many famous artists during his 37-year tenure, such as Andrew Wyeth, George Hughes, and J.C. Leyendecker. However, the Post's most famous cover artist, by far, was Norman Rockwell. He did his first cover for the magazine in 1916, and over the course of the next 5 decades, he went on to produce a total of 321 covers, leaving an indelible impression on generations of readers. With Curtis and Lorimer leading the way, the Saturday Evening Post continued to grow its circulation throughout the first half of the 20th century. The magazine peaked in the early 1960s with about 7 million readers, but thanks to the rise of television and a crop of new competing magazines, the Post's readership had cratered by the end of the decade. The magazine closed up shop in 1969, but was revived just 2 years later, although now as a quarterly publication. The Saturday Evening Post had been saved again, but its 2 year lapse in publication had cost it the title of America's oldest continuously published magazine. That honor now belongs to Scientific American, which was founded in 1845. Its glory days may be behind it, but the Saturday Evening Post still lives on. It continues to be published on a bi-monthly basis by a non-profit group dedicated to keeping this historic institution alive. The current iteration of the magazine features a similar blend of news, articles, works of fiction, and humorous illustrations. The dedicated staff has also created an online archive of the magazine's full existing backlog. So, if you're jonesing for more weird, old-timey content like that report about the 105-year-old father-to-be, well, the Saturday Evening Post has still got you covered. I'm Gabe Lousier, and hopefully you now know a little more about history today than you did yesterday. If you have a second and you're so inclined, consider following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at TDIHCShow. And if you have any comments or suggestions, you can always send them my way at thisday@iheartmedia.com. Thanks to Chandler Mays for producing the show, and thank you for listening. I'll see you back here again tomorrow for another day in history class.
Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.